All right, you did such a good job at silencing your phones and taking your seats. Very, very proud. We have an awesome audience here today. So welcome, everyone. We're going to get started. My name is Lauren Larson-Deal, and I'm a Senior Director of Global Customer Success Management at Oracle Corporation, and I'll be your MC for today's session. I'll be introducing our thought leader and Q&A for the last 10 and 15 minutes. As you may have noticed, there are microphones available in both aisles, so you can line up for questions for a Q&A at the end. I am thrilled to be here today to support the advancement of women leaders with a conference that offers a blend of practical tools and advice and inspiration for peer networking. We are committed to your empowerment to inspire you to make your mark in and for your companies, your careers, and your communities. At Oracle, we have an Oracle Women's Leadership Organization that also helps in the advancement of women's leaders. And we partner frequently with Watermark on some amazing events in the advancement of women, and looking forward to many more events this year also. We have an amazing hour in store for you on the topic of harness resilience to catapult your career. And it is my pleasure to introduce Amar Marston. Amar is the founder and CEO of Marston Consulting. This includes work with clients such as the United Nations, FTSE, and Fortune 500 companies, Oxford University, and the foundation of British former First Lady, Sherry Blair. She is the author of the forthcoming book on transformative resilience and is an internationally recognized expert on women's leadership and advancement, the gender stress gap, and resilience. Her work with leaders like Mary Robinson, Ireland's first female president, and Joseph Stiglitz, the Nobel laureate economist, and as a top advisor to international NGOs, had placed her at the decision-making table around the world. Please put your hands together and welcome Amar Marston. And give me just a second to hobble off stage.
Do you want a hand? I'm good.
Okay.
Okay, can everybody hear me all right? Perfect. Good morning. How are you, ladies? And gentlemen, sorry. There are a few fabulous men here representing. How about that first opening panel? I only got to hear a little bit of it, but it sounded inspiring, some tough acts to follow, but also some really interesting food for thought. So before we get started, I wanted to ask you, how many of you have ever put yourself out into the world for a new initiative, a new job, a first step into leadership, and had it not go quite as planned? Can I see a show of hands? Yep, quite a few of us. Well, that's part of what I want to talk to you about today. I'm just going to make some somewhat brief remarks, but then turn it over to these four amazing women and hear about their stories and their journeys. So why am I the one standing up here talking about these issues? Well, it's been an interesting journey for me. I started my career working on a range of social issues. I lived in some of the poorest communities in the world in countries like Mexico, India, Cambodia. But I also worked with some of the world's most powerful leaders, including Mary Robinson, who was Ireland's first female president. So quite a range of experiences. And yet, the jobs that I was working in came to an end point for me. I started to feel like a square peg trying to fit myself in a round hole. And so I left and I started my own business. And I was all gung-ho, and then things didn't go quite as I had planned. Within just a couple of months of starting my own business, the UK government, I live in London currently, the UK government changed all the rules about the work visa that I had and what I needed to earn to stay in the country. So that was kind of like, okay, what do we do? On top of that, there was a financial crisis. And I was managing a number of large projects which aimed to tackle some of the biggest problems we have in the world. How do we get the private sector, businesses, governments around the world to collaborate on a more sustainable world? But I was doing this on a shoestring and under immense time pressures. These were things that many people would get the Nobel Prize for, let alone little me going, okay, let's figure this out. Add to that the fact that my father had a terrible accident, and I had to fly quickly across the world to Asia, where he was living. because he had his leg amputated. And I'm there one night in the hospital in Thailand, and I'm holding him up because he's forgotten that he's just had his leg amputated. And if he steps down, he's going to severely hurt himself. And the weight of the world is on my shoulders. I'm thinking, how can I manage all of this? I want to be able to take care of my family. I want to make a contribution to this world that we live in. I want to grow a business. I want to do well. And yet it was too much. And before I knew it, I ended up in bed with slipped discs in my back. And I just had to let go of control. I was on bed rest off and on for about 6 months. And, you know, it was one step at a time. I started out feeling like, okay, I'm waking up this morning. What am I going to do? Oh, right, I'm going to watch the sun move across the wall outside my window. Not my normal day. But in time, I did get better, and I learned a lot from that process. It also changed my focus, away from me being somebody that needed to jet all over the world and fix problems, to being somebody that, one, needed to build my own strength, learn and grow, but also then offer that to others and think about how each of us builds our own skills, takes that into our workplaces, takes that into our families, the communities that we're a part of, and our larger world. So, what does this mean for all of you? Well, all of us have these abilities, and all of us have faced a number of challenges, and we're going to hear about the different experiences that these women have had. But I want to emphasize the point, we start with ourselves. We have to build our own skills. We have to build our own trust in ourselves. We have to learn to let go of control when we don't actually have control over some of the surrounding circumstances. But it isn't just all about us. We have a ripple effect. We have an impact on others. And we also have a responsibility as part of a broader world. And I know that that's something that so many of you care about, as well as these folks on stage. I want to be clear here. We can learn to build our skills. Many of us have already done it in our lives, whether or not we've thought about it in those terms of being more resilient on our own career paths. But this is not about fixing women or fixing people. We also are living and working within certain contexts. This is a context in which women have faced barriers over generations. We've also made a number of advances, but as somebody that has done a significant amount of research on things like women's leadership and advancement in the workplace, I can tell you that we have stalled over decades in certain areas. We've also made significant progress, and I want to emphasize that because we do have agency. We do have the power to take steps forward, but we have to address the structural barriers that we face. And I was very encouraged to hear Sheryl Sandberg talk about the changing environment that we are living and working in, which we can't ignore. It will fundamentally affect the way that we work. It will affect our own need to be resilient, and it will have an impact on how we are able to advance. We may see a number of setbacks. And at the same time, this moment in history appears to be opening up a number of opportunities and tons of interesting, strong, powerful women, men who are advocates for women are stepping forward. So, without further ado, let me turn this over to some of the wonderful women that we are going to hear more from. I'm just going to remind you of who they are and then let each of them introduce themselves as we go along. So we have here Sherry Heyman with MasterCard, Marjane Moore Roberts with Yahoo, Shilpa Shah with Puyana, and Wendy Anderson with RL Leaders. Thank you so much.
So hi, I'm Sherry Heyman. I'm an executive vice president at MasterCard. I head up a group there called Digital Partnerships. So I started my career not doing digital partnerships at MasterCard, but as a lawyer. I was a corporate finance lawyer at a big law firm in New York. I loved it. I got a lot out of it. But I kind of always romanticized. I did debt and equity deals, big public debt and equity deals, and private venture capital, stuff like that. I always really romanticized what it would be like to work at, you know, one of my clients, you know, at an investment bank or at a hedge fund. These people seem to, like, you know, always have a lot of great stuff going on. They were making, you know, way more money than me. They were probably working as much as me, but I just thought it was very romantic. And so I eventually got the opportunity to switch to the banking side. And the banking side, it was a lot of fun, but in order to kind of fit in, I found myself always sort of acting in a certain way, like the way that I thought everyone wanted me to act, and acting kind of like something I'm not. You know, I was really guarded. It was a predominantly male environment. I was the only female banker, you know, in my whole group. I was in global structured finance, and I happened to be securitizing Alt-A mortgages, so you may know where this is going. And so, you know, I actually had it was fine. Like, I had a very successful 3.5 years there. But what I found was that I wasn't fulfilled, like, at all. It was sort of a very kind of vapid, for me, it was like a very, you know, I love doing deals and I love winning, which is something you'll hear later that I took along with me. When I was searching for what I wanted to do, I wanted to keep that part of it. But I felt like I wanted to, you know, do something where I could be more myself and where I felt more connected to what it was I was doing. And it wasn't just deal work, you know, and just for the purpose of making money. I mean, which is good for some people, but for me, I kind of wanted it to be more. So the financial crisis happened. I had just had a baby, which was great timing. And then I ended up, and then, you know, I got fired with, you know, 10,000 or 20,000 other people on that same day. And so, you know, I had not been a lawyer for 3.5 years, and I ended up actually getting a job doing something that was even less like me. I got a job as an analyst at a hedge fund, which, again, I had also romanticized and I thought was going to be really amazing. But as any of you would get, you know, to know from me, from talking to me for not even 2 minutes, I love people. Like, I love talking to people. I love interactions with people. I get a lot out of, like, I'm an extrovert. I get a lot, you know, back from people. And so at this hedge fund, it was a long-only equity fund, value fund, where we only held 12 stocks. And I found myself with headphones on all day, like, building financial models. So this was not a great fit for me. And so it was almost fortunate, you know, when the fund folded and the, you know, the market collapsed. But this was not a bad thing for me. This was almost like, you know, fate telling me, you know, Sherry, you really should figure out what it is that you really like to do and go with that. Kind of be authentic, find a place where you can be yourself. And that's what I did, you know, and I ended up, there was a bunch of stuff along the way that I might talk about a little bit later, but I ended up having the opportunity to get a job at MasterCard. I took a huge step back to do this. You know, I had been, you know, kind of already a vice president at the bank, had been a lawyer for a bunch of years before that, and I took a part-time job at MasterCard, you know, just to get back in there. Why? Because MasterCard was a company I really respected. It actually, it just seemed like a place where I could give back, where they were giving back to the world. And when I got there, I decided I am going to really just focus on being me, like, and being myself. And I'm going to do things that I feel good about, and I'm not going to pretend to be something I'm not. I'm going to help people. I'm going to get really into the stuff, the technology, and I'm going to win. Like, those are the three things I love to do, and I got there, and I'm like, I'm going to do those three things. I'm going to do them every day. And then it turns out, and you'll hear more about this later, but it all came back to me, like, amazingly. So when I sort of made this decision to go out and do that, like, you know, and really be true to myself, it all came back to me, and I ended up, I mean, now, after a whole bunch of other jobs at MasterCard, I basically have, my dream job now.
Thank you so much, Sherry. I'm going to ask Marjane to now step in and tell us a little bit about the arc of her career, or perhaps one of the more challenging moments that...
Sure. The first thing, I'm Marjane Moore Roberts. I'm the Global Head of Inclusive Diversity for Yahoo. And first of all, whenever I do these talks, I always just like to look out over the room and take it in. This is like my dream. As a head of diversity, you wake up in a room full of women who are powerful. And I'm like, my job is done. So I feel like I already won. So thank you, guys. It's a real pleasure and a privilege to be here.
So I started my career, I'm from Columbus, Ohio. I grew up in the inner city and went to a public high school and found out about college sometime in my late junior year and said, I'll try next year. And I wasn't even supposed to go. Sometime in April of my senior year, I had a teacher who said, are you crazy? And we rallied and I got in college. So I graduated and I thought, I have a degree, I've already won. I love, Sean Anker talked about that today a little bit, and I was really, it reminded me of that. And so I went to school, I did things, I was active, and quite honestly, because, and perhaps a little sadly, my ambitions were not enormous at that time. I had finished school and, specific path in mind. So I went to college, I got a degree, I thought I was going to teach, and then I was like, not going to teach. Then I had a theater major with an education minor, and I did theater for a while, and eventually made my way to New York. Now, one of the first jobs I had was as a customer service representative at the phone company. And I would say, thank you for calling Ameritech, this is Marjanae, how can I help you? And it was one of the most thrilling jobs of my life, because you could talk to people anywhere, and I could use any voice I wanted, I could be whoever I wanted. So it was an amazing kind of job for me, yet I had that feeling while I was doing it, was that there was this world view that there's a lot, you know, that I don't know, and I didn't have a specific expectation of where I was going to be and where I needed to land, and that afforded me the opportunity to stay open. You know, last year I was, you know, I went through many jobs. I got to New York, amazingly. It was supposed to be 3 months, and I was going to go home. My father was like, I'll be back, and I was like, okay. And, you know, 3 months passed, 6 months passed, 6 years passed, 12 years passed, and here I am. And throughout that time, I worked at the tiniest of startups to now Yahoo, and I've been laid off 3 or 4 times. I've you know, started my career over from customer service rep to client services to operations. I built businesses from scratch, which is sort of what I'm doing now at Yahoo. But one of the things that happened when the last startup I joined was called Scan Scout, and I was employee number 14. And I was like, we're going to do something big, right? You know, it was another chance to build, and that was always exciting for me. And so through that job, I learned the advertising business. We sold that company together. It was a great success. We sold it to what's now Trimmer Video. Some of you may have heard that if you're in the ad space. And then I became GM of a company that was acquired by Yahoo. So that's how I got to Yahoo, through that advertising operations general manager space. And I got to Yahoo, and I love your story, because, you know, I sort of didn't quite know how I ended up as the, you know, as the head of network video advertising at Yahoo. I kind of landed there, and I was like, well, that's interesting, I'll just keep doing it. And it was great for 2 years. It was a great business. When my team had it, it was a very small team, we grew up from zero to $50 million over 3.5 years. Then Yahoo acquired someone else and they took it over. Now it's way bigger than that, but it's one of the things I'm most proud of. And what happened, though, during that time is I was in this space where I was always hitting my head. I was always frustrated. I always wanted, it was the time I was like, what is, ugh. I just not get my own skin. And I found myself constantly wondering, this thing? And it, you know, I was open to anything, but it didn't feel like the thing. And I was often the only, at that time, woman, the only black woman for sure, within our sales org. And I had no intention of ever being in sales. I did not like salespeople. they were my nemesis, so I constantly fought with salespeople. And there I was, a salesperson. And but, you know, I just knew it wasn't quite the fit. And finally, I would complain. It's 4 years later, and I talked to my girlfriends. You know, I'd say, God, why am I, you know, every day it's something. And someone said, when are you going to own the fact that you are a black woman in corporate America, and the challenges that you are facing are not unique? Use your voice. Use your experience. And I was so mad at her. I was like, I've been in sales. I'm in sales. And it's very glorifying, you know, like you might remember. It's very glorifying to be in sales, you know, because you're making money and people are happy. I mean, they're making money, you're making money. So you think you're happy and you're really not. Because you are, I love what Sean said, it's like good quarter, what are you doing next quarter? Great year, what are you doing next year? And it just felt like you would never get there. And so, you know, to close the story, what happened is we built that business, we transitioned it over. I was getting laid off as part of the 2016 layoffs last February. And I was like, I'm out, finally. I was like relieved. I told my team, I was like, start looking. We're gonna go do something new. And they were like, are you crazy? And it was great because they said, well, we have this other thing we think you'd be great at. And I have been complaining about, you know, the diversity story in tech to various people. I had taken a role as the co-chair of the YBN, the Yahoo Black Network, and so then I was really complaining because I could get meetings. I was like, and when are y'all gonna hire somebody? We need a head of diversity. And they were like, when are you gonna start thinking about doing something? And I was like, that's not me, I'm in sales, you know. I don't want to go in HR. And through many conversations and, you know, both internally and externally, I ended up taking the role, and it really is a dream job for me in a number of ways, one of which, again, is seeing you all here. But the other way is I have an unrestricted voice suddenly. I can kind of say whatever I want to say. And it's gratifying. And I say it to positive. I take it seriously. I am respectful of that. A big, big responsibility, but also a big opportunity for influence. And so when I think about resilience, the first thing I would say to anyone, young or old, stay open. You never know where your path is going to take you.
Thank you so much.
Hi, everyone. I'm Shilpa Shah, so I'm the co-founder of Guyana. For those of you who don't know us, we're a fashion brand based in San Francisco, and our whole ethos and reason for being is to bring fewer, better things to women. And what that means to us is we saw a total lack of quality in the marketplace, pieces that you could wear always that could actually last the test of time that would make a woman feel beautiful. And if a woman feels beautiful, she's unstoppable because she feels very confident and comfortable in her own skin. And also that has layers of meaning and heritage. So we actually go to the places where materials are made in country and work with the best craftsmen of the world to bring these products to you. And then we package it all and deliver it at accessible prices by selling it direct to consumer. So we're trying to change the fashion game. If you asked me at 25 if I would be a co-founder of a fashion company, I would have said you were crazy. I'm an actual undergrad in computer science and a UI designer by trade. So I was an interaction designer for 10 years doing mobile interfaces, digital ecosystems. You know, I was working on the iPhone killer before the iPhone came out, stuff like that. And I found myself at 30. My husband was going through fellowship in medical school, and I was kind of loved my career, loved what I did, loved crafting customer experiences. But I found like I was helping him get through medical school and fellowship and residency, and was kind of putting off my next step on hold. I was waiting to go back to grad school, and I thought I would go get a master's in design. And I was 30 years old, and I got pregnant with my first son, and we were in Baltimore for 1 year for his fellowship, and I was working remotely, and he was almost done, and I had this conversation with my mom, and she was like, okay, great, so after this year is over, are you ready to be a woman of leisure? I'm of South Asian descent, and I was, you know, and all of a sudden, for a decade, my career was so important, and everyone was rooting for me because I was getting my husband through school. I put the down payment on my first house. Like, you know, I was the breadwinner, and to hear the conversation change like that was appalling to me, for one. And I needed to, you know, like I didn't even know how to react. I, at that point, and even actually earlier than that, knew that I wasn't done. When I got pregnant, I knew maybe that's like a question of my maternal nature, but I wasn't awash with the maternal. I was very fulfilled. I was very happy, but I knew at that point that I wanted to do more, that my chapter wasn't done. My voice needed to be heard further. And so I kind of did a 180 and started looking instead of at design and going towards business, thinking that maybe that's what I needed to do, because I'd worked on all of these great design ideas for a decade, and you know, maybe two of them made it to market. And so I went to business school to kind of pick up on Marjane's theme, to go find out what I didn't know I didn't know, solely with that one objective in mind. I knew there was what I didn't know, and I knew what I knew, but there was a whole world out there that I just didn't know. And I wanted to understand what happened in a boardroom, which I used to call like the place good ideas go to die. And I wanted to sit at the table. I wanted to understand what was that thinking. It was completely out of my comfort zone. And it's exactly that. Putting yourself, to me, resilience is putting yourself in those situations where you're completely uncomfortable, that you don't have any reason for being there, that you are basically going to push yourself to the max in any capacity in any way possible. So it was in my second year, I had my second child. I had a 4-month-old, a 3.5-year-old, and I decided to start a company. I still had a semester left of school, so I was a little crazy that way, and it really pushed my limits. I had no idea how hard starting a company was with my partner, who's also an amazing Latin American woman. And just to start this business from nothing in a fashion industry where there is no shortage of handbags and scarves, and to create a unique offering in that space and really have our voice be heard, and to create a business where we had no contacts, no background in retail, no background in fashion, and to make a really successful company 5.5 years later, I think is testament of really seeing what you can do when you're super uncomfortable. And to me, I think, and we can get into some, I know a lot of people here are here for, want tactical things that they can do next. I think one of those is definitely being uncomfortable, taking a risk, you know, doing, like, definitely putting yourself in situations like that. But then also, hiring help, right? Like, anything that you can outsource, outsource. I'm not going to be one of those that doesn't talk about how the amazing nanny that I have. Involving your partner so that they can actually support you in this and motivate you when you're like, I'm ready to give up. I think there's a lot of things that we can do to support one another. I think asking your community of women to also lift you up is really important. There's so many people who have helped me every step of the way. And I think that's like something that we should all leverage, a session like this, a conference like this, to really help each other reach those heights.
I was just saying to Shilpa that I feel like taking notes, you know? I mean, I feel like there are so many things that I resonate with that I've been through before as well, and yet sometimes it feels like hearing it for the first time, you know, and you need to just be jotting it down again. So I'm really grateful for all four of you. Amma and I go way back to graduate school days when we didn't know what the hell was next, and so she and I have certainly been through our own journey. Thanks to Watermark. Thanks to all of you for being here. I'm with Marjane. This is like a dream for me. It's exceedingly rare that I have been able to be graced by a group of women who are trying to work it out for themselves, where they are in life, and to try to figure out how do we thoughtfully, you know, pursue those next steps, be strategic, apply our emotional intelligence, have a full life, not give up on all of those things that we really care about. And I think it's a balancing act that most of the time is impossible, but I'm into that. So anything that seems impossible, I think we probably all in this room share a real commitment to. My name is Wendy Anderson. I am from Little Rock, Arkansas, originally. My natal landscape is the South. I most recently was in the Obama administration for 5 years working at the Department of Defense. I had the really amazing opportunity and privilege to work directly for Secretaries Panetta, Hagel, and Ash Carter, Ash Carter, incidentally, was our most recent Secretary of Defense, who just left about a week and a half ago. And I was his chief of staff at the department for 4.5 years, and then went to work for Secretary Hagel as his number two civilian in the Department of Defense. I left government after a short stint at the Commerce Department, which I'll chat with you about in a second. Life doesn't always go as we would like for it to. But I'll tell you, I'd been in government for 12 or 13 years and didn't know it was time for me to go. The universe had different plans. But I want to actually start, if you all don't mind, at a slightly different place. You know, I think Amma has said it. My mom actually has said this to me. Sheryl Sandberg has said it on a number of occasions, I think even in her Berkeley commencement address, that we're not only identified by what we achieve, but how we survive. And I want to start there, because to me, the whole conversation about resilience starts in that survival place and what our sources of it are. I'm a proud eldest child of a single mom. I grew up in a working class family. I grew up with two parents who divorced when I was 3, and both of whom were incredibly progressive for the places that they lived and for the families that we all inherited. And their modeling of a different way to be in a set of circumstances where I was already on the outside of a lot of things, a lot of groups, a lot of power structures, has been so powerfully manifest in all of the decisions that I have ended up making. I have a younger sister. I have a dad who, even though I didn't see him a ton and we didn't live with him, would force me and my sister to stand up in front of those big whiteboards and give presentations because he wanted his two girls to be able to speak without ums and haws and ohs and sighs and slumps. And, you know, it was this exhausting parade of, do we have to do the whiteboard, Dad? And it was like, yeah, you got to do the whiteboard, or we're not going to go to the movie or the aquarium, or, you know. And then we would have to practice the handshake. And I was like, who does this? Like, are you kidding me? He was like, you'll thank me later, you'll thank me, you know. And so my sister and I would get up there at like 7 and 11, and we practiced the handshake, and it was the most ridiculous thing that I ever heard, until I started hearing in my early 20s, wow, you got a great handshake, Miss Anderson. I was like, yeah, I've been working on it for a while. But I really, in the midst of a lot of absence of things, and in the midst of a lot of lack, which I didn't know I had at the time, I had a lot, and it's taken me, you know, now that I'm into my 40s, a while to, as some of you might know, to do midrash on that, you know, or to sort of flow out that storyline. But I wanted to start there. We all have those sources of how we have survived, the stuff that we've, you know, has come into the DNA from the outside, mixes with the stuff that's there, and you sort of get your willfulness, and you get your attitude towards life, and you get your disposition. Sometimes you got to work against that stuff and manage it and shape it and consciously work with it, which I've certainly had to do. But you got stuff that's there. We all do. And that's just one thing that I, you know, wanted to comment on these awesome women up here. It's just so nice to be reminded of that, and it helps me remember it. Just a couple of things. I started off being very interested in women. Not a big surprise. My mom, a big, loud family of Southern women who dominated, you know, could kick the life out of every man who wanted to ever say anything in my household. And also, you know, in the South, where religion and politics were often inextricably linked. And I became fascinated by how religious thought, behaviors, beliefs translated into social and political action. And so very early on, I thought, you know, if I ever go abroad, and maybe I'll try to do that, I'm going to piece all those things together that I really care about and see what I can come up with. So I ended up early on, I was 20, spending a year by myself on something called the Thomas Watson Fellowship, where I looked at and studied women-led faith-based NGOs operating in areas of conflict. And I was in Russia right at the time that Chechnya was coming up on the radar screen and the Soviet Union had collapsed and missionaries from North America were flooding into Russia. I lived in Israel and in Palestine, and then I lived in India. And what's interesting to me is that over that year and the years that followed, I spent a lot of time, and I've just really realized this recently, working with, learning from, and living with women in communities who constantly rebounded, right? Which is really like the etymological roots of the word resilience, which I'd forgotten until I thought about this panel, is the rebound, the reback. How do we come back? And it's a tremendous set of stories about resilient women, resilient communities, resilient nation states, et cetera, et cetera. And it was very motivating for me, and it complemented a lot of what my original desires were. Well, I did that for a lot of years working with Rwandans and Burundians and the Northern Irish women, and I was in Cyprus and India, Pakistan, and it goes on and on. A lot of time in a lot of difficult areas. And 9/11 happened. And I realized that I had been out there in the world focusing on other countries, and I didn't really know what I was doing or what I was contributing to at the time, but I was in my early 20s and I thought, this has got to be worth it. I mean, I don't know what that means. I can't measure it. The groups I was working with can't measure it, so how do you manage it, you know, et cetera. But 9/11 happened, and I thought, you know, I don't know what in the world that set of events is a consequence of, the thousands and thousands and thousands of things that had to happen that resulted in that day. But why in the world am I not contributing to my own government? Why am I not working with the development and the communication of my own foreign and defense policies? I hadn't spent any time doing anything other than criticizing. And so I did that, and then of course I wasn't pedigreed, and then I was like, oh my God, I gotta go back to graduate school. So I did all these things that I had to do that people said to me I had to do to be competitive in the marketplace, and that really launched the government career, which was when George W. Bush was president, and then when Barack Obama became president. I want to say just two things, and I'll end on the Commerce Department piece. I got an invitation about 2 years into the Obama administration to join DOD. I come from a set of military service members. That service piece has been a deep part of me throughout my whole life. And I wanted to find a way to give back and to be a part of some transpersonal mission, you know, that was more than the sum of its parts. If you got people all around the world who are willing to put their lives on the line so that we can do things like this, I wanted to be a part of that. And I worked my butt off for 4.5 years, 17-hour days, weekends were gone, supporting the number two and the number one at the Department of Defense. And it was really hard. And I thought, I love a challenge, I love to be uncomfortable, I love to do things that are awkward, I'll figure it out. But I realized over time, and I didn't know this until I ended up transferring to work with the Secretary of Commerce for a period of time, that I'd started to hunker down. You know, I'd started to become that over-controlling, micromanaging, angry, embittered, tired person. And, you know, I started to sadly fall into the stereotype of, God, she's a bitch, and she's exhausting, and we can't be around her, and she doesn't do team, and she's doing everything by herself. But I was living in that incredibly difficult dynamic, which all of us, I think, know, of, well, if you try to demonstrate and exert some initiative, then you're called those things. And if you don't do that, then you're passive and you're weak and you're disempowered and nobody listens to you and you're literally engaging in the silencing act of yourself. And I've never been able to figure that out. I have never, ever been able to figure it out. I didn't realize how exhausted and fried I was until I went to the Department of Commerce, knowing that I didn't want to be in the domestic part of the executive branch. I had no experience with it. I didn't know the portfolio. I didn't know the issues. At this point, I didn't care. But I was sort of like, no, I'm going to ride the administration out, and I'm going to do this, and I'm getting up the ladder, and I'm going to be... And I was so ambitious and so focused. By the way, two things that I think are great things for women to be. But I got to a point where I worked myself into this very hyper-isolated, dangerous place of hunkering down, not asking for help, not opening up, not being inclusive. And I didn't know. And I started to have friends say to me, you know, what's going on with you, and you're changing, and I can't get access to you. The point is that the opportunity didn't work out. And the Secretary of Commerce, who is no longer there, but who's still a great friend and mentor of mine, had a conversation and she said, you are really talented and you got a lot of amazing things going on, but this is not working. And I was like, you know, you just, it's like the loud, you know, you see it in slow motion and you're trying to stop it and you're diving back through your career changing behaviors of 2 months ago. And I was stunned not because I didn't know it wasn't a fit, but because I always thought that I could just work it out. Yeah. Always thought, because I kind of had. So for me, it has been 2 years of wrestling with what the hell happened there. And she said to me on our last dinner, she said, you know, Wendy, you really are a lot of things. You're going to be fine in your life. And I know this is like a horrifying, wounding moment for you, and you're going to have to figure that out. But you're going to have to burn through that embarrassment. You're going to have to sit through the awkwardness. You're going to have to figure out how to reputationally engage in what it is that happened here. And you've got to learn to be vulnerable again. Because if you've ever known, you've forgotten. And I'll leave it there.
Well, I'm so grateful for all of these stories. And Wendy, thank you. I don't want you to think this is nepotism. But part of why Wendy is here today is because I have personally found this story so empowering. To be able to show our vulnerability, and that's not something that we often are able to do. I know that after I hurt my back, I spent a lot of time regrouping, and people didn't see a lot of me. I couldn't walk very well. Humor was also a part of that. You guys have all showed the humorous side of yours, where I think I came in and said, it was hard. It was real hard. And there were those moments of levity that I think really helped, like, okay, I can walk a block this week. I'm listening to Snoop Dogg, and I'm grasping my low back going, yeah, I still got it, sure, okay. And those moments, I think, also help. But the vulnerability is really the starting place, and that's hard unless you have an environment that can kind of embrace that, where it feels safe to poke your head out. And I just want to bring together a few points of what I heard, and I had hoped to also come back and start a dialogue about how we contribute our voices. I think some of these lovely ladies have already started that conversation, and we may have to continue it after, but I don't want to lose some of what stood out most to me and I think is learning for all of us. So Sherry started talking about authenticity. What could be more important than being ourselves? You're not going to go very far or feel very resilient if you're not doing the right thing for yourself. You know, it's not about what's right for somebody else. How do we define success for ourselves? Wendy talked amazingly about vulnerability. Can we be brave enough to show ourselves? And that goes hand in hand with authenticity. Can we take our masks off and say, okay, here I am. Yeah, maybe I've got a little bit of a dodgy back. I still like Snoop Dogg. I'm still trying to figure out how to make a business, or whatever your equivalent of it is. Martina, you're just amazing in your humor, but also your optimism. And I loved this. I could answer the phone. I was thrilled about it. I could use any voice I wanted. You know, I remember the days when I started my career answering the phone, and I was like, what am I doing here? Why don't people see I can shine? And you know, that mindset as a starting point, I think, is particularly important in how we lay the grounds for being resilient in what for many of us will be a journey throughout our lifetime. And for some of us, it's more of a clear arc. And for some of us, like myself, it's more like whoop, boop, boop. And everyone's going, where's that going? Well, you know, if you're true to yourself, it makes sense. Let's see, what else did I want to bring in here? Shilpa, I loved what you had to say, and I think many others did, about your voice needing to be heard further. And what I understood to be some bravery in standing up against a cultural norm. And it's not just a norm held by one culture, which is kind of like, okay, now you've fulfilled your mission, you've had children, so you'll be doing that for a while. But to say, no, I have more to offer to the world. There's more that I want to accomplish, but I also have something further to offer. And taking risks, being comfortable with risk, that really is a key for so many of us in sticking our hands up and saying, okay, I'm going to go for leadership. Or I'm gonna go and restart a new career. And for me, that's part of being resilient. God, is it scary to take this risk? you know, it's a starting point, and often it's easier to do so when you have support. And that's something that was also raised in leveraging support, getting to the point where we feel brave enough to take those risks, using other people to help us gain perspective, where something feels like, as Wendy said, you know, this primal scream of like, ah, how did that go wrong? Somebody else who has, you know, some distance from it can say to you, actually, I see you doing the primal scream, and have you ever thought about it this way? Or have you ever seen the flip side of that, the opportunity? I'm sure there is more to say, and I've probably left out some of the crucial moments. You'll have to follow up with all of these amazing ladies in the in-between. I wanted to come back to something that you said, Wendy, which is a lot of this begins with our families. A lot of what we learn starts with what we're told we can do and also what we can't do. But that continues throughout our lifetime. And many people tell us, oh yeah, you'd be great at that. Others tell us, whether directly or indirectly, well, you could try that, but... And they might not be saying it directly, but they're sending us the signals of like, no, that's not for you. You're not going to be capable of that. And I guess what I'd like to say is, who gets to define who you are? I'm not saying that I get to on behalf of all of you. It's up to each one of us. I have not become a dictator, I promise. But it really is about the mindset that we choose, how we build our own skills, what we do with that. And one of the things that each of you touched on in your own way is making a larger contribution. So whether you're somebody that's politically active or socially active in overt ways, or whether it's just being part of a larger society, the skills that we build, we then, and the mindset in particular, we then carry into our workplaces. We then channel through the kinds of leadership that we show. We bring it home to our families. And this is a more critical moment than most that I can remember for us to raise our voices, particularly to say, okay, we have a direct stake in what's taking place in the world. It's here in the US. It's, you know, first it's here in Silicon Valley. It's part of what happens in California. It's part of what happens in the US and part of what happens in the world. And I'm a big picture thinker, so I can't help but see that it's about these layers of influence. We all may feel comfortable influencing at different points in those spheres of influence, and that's okay. It is all needed more than ever. And I just want to say that we're about to see a lot of changes. We already have. I don't want to be partisan here. For me, some of them are particularly disheartening, and it's not about what my political affiliation is. It's just about a broader concern for the world and for all of our evolution. I think that's true for people in business, for people in government, for your average citizen. More than ever, it's a time when our voices count, and you can decide what that means. But building our own skills is the starting point, and is important now as we feel a lot of turbulence. So I am getting a 5-minute mark here, and I think, are we gonna have some questions now? Okay, we have 3 more minutes of questions? Okay, we don't need 3 more minutes of me. Let's get some more of these ladies. So seeing as I've been going on about how we contribute to the world, Marjane, I'm gonna start with you and sadly only give you a minute, but can you talk a bit about what that has meant for you?
Yeah, I mean, now more than ever, I think you're right. You know, what I'm really focused on is how do we figure out a bridge for the work that we're doing to create more understanding between different groups of people. I think, as you know, one of the things I said to my team is that sometimes you take a big step back to take the big step forward. And a lot of what we were looking at is, where's the commonality in these stories? There's clearly 2 narratives going on in the world. And within our own environment, you can see one situation and 2 people or 2 groups of people have 2 different views. Where's the commonality? And when we look at that, and you know, one of the things that comes up often in my work is definitely around racism and sexism and every ism you can think of. And in the middle of that is the common thing I see and hear is pain or fear. So this group is fearful that that group is going to get something they're not. This group is fearful of the same things. And so what we've really been looking at is, where is the bridge? What's the commonality? And how can we get people to try and align on that commonality? Sorry.
Well, I'm sorry to bring the others of you in on this, but I think it's just the start of the conversation, hopefully. Thank you so much. Can we have a hand for the panelists?
So we're not done yet. We have 10 minutes to answer all of your questions that I know you're dying to ask. Amazing stories that I'm sure are very useful for all of us. But Amma, could we quickly just summarize two or three takeaways that might help us just be more resilient in our careers before we get to Q&A? So we do just, you can line up for microphones on either side and get your questions asked. So I really encourage you to do so. But Amma, just a quick summary would be fabulous.
I think that I've already done that to some extent. But you know, we've heard a lot about the strengths and the resilience of all of these women, not to mention their amazing accomplishments and the way that they've been able to advance. A lot of different skills and tools. You know, we talked about humor, we talked about your own starting mindset, leveraging the support of others, being vulnerable. And I would say that going forward, we have to think individually, we have to think collectively, we have to think nationally and internationally about what becoming resilient means for all of us. And I would just say that more than ever, I'm convinced that my own success may be more closely linked to your success, or the success of one of you out there, or the success of a woman working at a microchip factory in China, than we might think about in our day to day. So there is this kind of interlinkage. And you know, advancement also is about the women that have come before us. We just had a really strong first female presidential candidate at that level. I think that there are some precedents set, and you know, that we can build on and think of going forward. And I guess I would just say we have a number of choices before us, and luckily those choices are up to us. The world around us and the environment may be changing quite quickly, but a lot of power is in our own hands about the choices we make and what we do next. So thank you.
Great. Thank you, Amma. All right, we'll get to our first question. I see we're lined up. Excellent job, ladies.
Hi, thank you for doing the panel. My name is Wendy Hauer. I'm from Cisco. And Sherry, your story about authenticity really hit home for me. So I'm imagining the day you wake up, I'm going to be authentic. But what happens when your authenticity, you're doubting it or it's tested? Can you give an example of what that was like and how you pushed through?
To be honest, it was just more, I just decided I wasn't gonna bullshit anymore. And really, I mean, that's what I decided. And I decided that, like, you know what, I'm gonna dress the way I want. And at one time at the law firm, I came in with blue nails and they were really pissed off and they made me, like, they said, you do not come back to work with blue nails. And this was early on. I mean, I'm not, well, probably a lot older than I look, hopefully. But like, you know, I just decided I'm not gonna do that anymore. And so what I decided when I started at MasterCard was, if it doesn't work out, I'm leaving a kid at home with a nanny to, like, do this. And I mean, at the time, my husband's freelance and I didn't really have a choice. Like, now I love to work and I'm glad I have a career. At the time, it was like, I have to work, you know? So, but I decided if it doesn't work out here, I just had it in my head right from the beginning, I'll just go somewhere else. Like, I found another job, I sort of got through a bunch of stuff, and like, it has been tested. But I just, you know, figured, look, if I can't make it work out in a way that really is good for me, then I don't belong here and I'm gonna go somewhere else.
Yeah, I'll add to that because I think this is key.
I think that you would be surprised at how many people will be relieved when you start being your authentic self.
That's interesting.
Just think about that. And you will feel, you will give more, mm-hmm. you will produce more, you will lead better, and people will care more about what you're producing. So just think about that as you consider.
I think that's an excellent point, and I just wanted to add that I think my primal scream was a deep breath.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because of precisely what you just said, there was no way that I could come to that as me. And as a result, was tremendously relieved, you know, after being wounded and embarrassed and all the rest of it myself. It just was a huge, huge point to make. So I think the deep breath piece was really key in recognizing that.
I'll just add one more thing. I think your strengths of your character are also your weaknesses, right? It's always the flip side of the same coin. And so I think a lot of time we go through life trying to get rid of our weaknesses, but by doing so, we'll get rid of our strengths. So it's just about balancing and not beating yourself up and knowing when you can leverage what and adding that, like, just kind of, yeah, doing the balancing act.
Great. All right, next question, please.
Hi, I'm Brianna Mitchell from Clever, and I wanted to ask Marjanae about your point.
Did you say Clever?
Yeah. Influencer marketing agency. Yeah, come talk to me later. I have a question about, you mentioned you studied theater and then wound up in sales and the corporate world. I too studied theater and found myself in project management. And I wanted to ask all of you what advice you would have or you would give to somebody who may have a skill set that seems out of context, and how do you apply that to a space that you didn't see yourself entering, you know, originally, but you're excited about, you know, how do you apply those skills over?
I mean, again, for me, I always wanted to know what was over the rainbow. There's something over there, and everything you do is contributing to that. You're not going to know it until you get in there and use it. And one of the big things that came through, yes, public speaking, all of a sudden, always like, oh man, this is too good. Like, I'm still performing, you know, in some ways. But all of those things that you pick up along the way, they will naturally fit, because as you find your approach to your career, you're going to have to call on that stuff. Don't worry so much about knowing exactly how yet, but trust that everything that you're doing is going to pay off. I don't know if you could.
I'd love to add one thing. I have a theater background too, which may not be surprising, but I think Marjanae's points are really right on. One of the things that I sort of thought I did well before I actually really got immersed in theater was listen. And I feel like, as ridiculously cliche as that might sound, that sort of deep listening where you're not just hearing, you're not just seeing sort of the power dynamic and getting a sense of the landscape in which you'll be playing, but you're hearing it, there's something there. I mean, I feel like the listening piece with me has been very helpful in going into environments where I don't quite know where I am and I've got to get my bearings and I don't know how to do it other than to rely on some interpersonal skills, and I can write a little bit and I can at least, you know, handshake. I can shake somebody's hand. But I think the listening is sort of an underrated skill, and it's an underrated application of presence to be able to bring to a situation like you're describing.
And then just approaching, I think, everything with a lot of humility, and like that we're always learning and we're going into every situation, even when you feel like you're the expert of something, that you have to continue to be a listener and always try to be ready to learn something new, I think is super important. And being comfortable to say that, I don't know, but I would love to learn that. Like, could you teach me? Can I spend time with you? Can you point me to where I can answer that question better for you? I think, you know, kind of with the authenticity piece, like not BSing your way out of situations, just like being authentically yourself and learning to get that answer, I think goes a long way.
Excellent. Okay, we have time for, I think, one, maybe two more questions. We've got 2 minutes.
Hi, my name is Kristen Nolan, and I help women leaders to increase their fitness, metabolism, and health. And being an entrepreneur, gone through lots of periods of time where resilience has been tough for me, especially in the face of rejection, whether that be a sales call or a public speaking gig that didn't go as planned. So my question for you all is, what are your top strategies to bounce back from rejection?
So for me, another part of of what I am is I really try to just live in the moment. Not that I don't try to learn from my mistakes, I definitely do, but I used to kind of ruminate on them a lot, and I used to not be able to let go of that. And like when I was in law school, I would be very super anxious if I like answered a question wrong or like stuff like that. But like, you know, now throughout my career, you know, I make mistakes all day long, like all the time. And like I've gone to a lot of public speaking engagements that did not go my way. There's been meetings that have not gone well, you know, deals we've lost, you know, and you just kind of gotta, there's so many other opportunities and you just sort of have to, at least for me, for me, one of my biggest strengths, I think, is that I can just kind of like, you just gotta block it out and just kind of learn from it, like kind of, you know, think about it for, you know, and long enough that you take out of it what you need to take out of it, but then just like move on and like, don't get off the path, and you can't let yourself get rattled, and use your support system, you know, your friends, your partner, your people at work, colleagues, mentors, whatever, to just, you know, have that strength to just keep moving forward and not let it kind of rattle you.
It's great advice. I agree. I think it's hard. It's not always
it's
easy
very hard.
To move on, but what you learn is that the quicker that you're able to recover
yeah.
and get on to the next thing, the less that other thing matters. Mm-hmm. The time, all of us are up here about 10, you know, all of our different jobs. It will pass. Mm-hmm. The universe is progressive. Work is progressive. Your career is progressive. It's going to go. So the quicker you learn the lesson and move on, I think the less those mistakes matter and the less they'll happen because you're not going to be obsessing about them.
All right, we're going to get to our last question. Sorry. And you can try to grab them up here after. Okay, go ahead.
I was just wondering if you guys could share any tips or tools that you use when you're just in that stress moment. I mean, you guys accomplish so much. There's so much at stake. You guys have all these wonderful things that you're doing, but there's got to be times when you're just tired or you're, you know, just, oh my gosh, there's so much stress. Like, is there anything that you, like, you could do that you could share that in those moments that you do so you don't give up or you kind of get through it? A spa appointment, a mantra, anything. Like, what do you guys do?
I'd love to hear what everybody else said. I cycle through a set of things, but it's all about first principles for me. It's about a deep breath, and I mean it. Because physiologically, it calms your heart rate, it slows down your blood pressure, it increases the space that you have between the feeling and acting out or acting through words on the feeling, right? There's space between our actions and what we feel. There is. It's just there. And so for me, as you know, I'm not like a Buddhist practitioner, you know, living in a monastery or something, but it has been fundamental to me. If I can't do that, I can't get the space I need and I can't slow myself. And we have control over that. Sometimes when I'm so frustrated, you know, I used to work for Senator Barbara Mikulski, who's the longest serving woman in the history of the United States Senate. And she used to say, you know, you can't guarantee an outcome, but you can guarantee an effort. And one of my self-management tools with stress has really been that, you know? I mean, I'm with Sherry, I make mistakes all day long, got a huge list. I mean, I'm like obsessive about what they are. But one of the management tools really for me is, did I give everything that I could to that? If I didn't, let me do an after-action report in my head. But if I did, then you got to let it go because whatever the rest was as outside of your control, music, you know, peppermint lattes, mochas. It's like whatever, you know, a drive with, you know, in a rented convertible. I mean, just whatever it takes to sort of move through that moment is where I am.
All right, ladies, we're going to have to wrap now. I just want to remind you for the 3 o'clock session on transformative resilience and leaders. And please give these lovely ladies an outstanding round of applause. Check your app on your phone or your book for the next sessions and have a fabulous rest of your day.